find my agenda. So we're gaining on it. We're now ready for
accountability clock.
Okay. You're still here, Lisa.
I'm still here. You can't get rid of me. Like I said.
You're not making much progress.
Tie that woman to her chair.
Brenda's going to join us. All right. Welcome.
So we put this on the agenda after during the agenda setting conversation because it looked like there was actually going to be some time on the agenda today. And we wanted to, I think Steve asked, how could we best use the time to set up, to tee us up for things that might come in the future. So what we really wanted to do is just have an opportunity. We have some questions for you to get feedback and your thoughts on how would be what would be most helpful for you all as the school and districts that have reached the end of year five start needing to come, and what would help you all most during the process. So we pulled together some guiding questions. We have some ideas on how it could look, but we would really, it's really about you having a chance to give us feedback and thoughts on what you need to get through that process. So I'll turn it over to Brenda now. Is that okay?
So to echo Alyssa, we do have some questions that are suggested for discussion, but definitely pose your own questions and feel free to interrupt us if you have ideas. One of the questions we did have was regarding what the handout. So is this just the timing and scheduling of all of the district presentations? And by district presentation, what I mean is kind of the culmination of the entire clock process. So at the end of that clock process, there's going to be a state review panel report that comes your way, a commissioner's recommendation report that comes your way, and hopefully if we're engaging with the district is going to put forth its own plan as well. And so that would all culminate in some type of district presentation where we would invite them to come forward and share that with you all and have you then consider those recommendations in direct action towards that school or district. So given that there are 28 schools and 8 districts that have to have directed action, we did come up with this sample schedule. There are a couple volunteers that are looking to come forward early, as you've heard, Pueblo and Aurora. Then we don't have districts scheduled to come until November, and we don't have anything scheduled, but we're proposing to not have districts come until November, mostly because at that point we would then have the new school performance frameworks, DPF data, and the school state review panel reports would be out by that time as well. And that means we would have a very tight time frame to get districts in. I'm proposing we front load it with as many as possible in the November, December, January time frame so that there's time to implement the pathway. So if we're directing them to convert a school to a charter school, for example, or to close a school, or to implement an innovation plan, all of that's going to require a lot of some head lead time to implement, especially if we want that to take place that following fall, so fall 2017. So for that reason, that's how we have proposed the timing recommendations. Would love to get your feedback on that and your thoughts.
Erg. Or it's just really overwhelming to think about what's going to happen.
Well, that's correct. The two districts that are coming forward early, are we going to have your recommendation and the review panel recommendation and all that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
We already have the review panel on those two.
Actually, we do have a bunch of them, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. We have the commissioner's recommendation on Aurora. We don't have a Pueblo 60 because I'm not sure what they're bringing forward.
Okay, so that was my first question. Now, is this the full amount? 12, 2, 2, 4, 6, 8 this and 9 is 17. Is that it?
Plus the two early 18-19.
18-19.
There are 19 unique districts. So this all assumes they only need to come once. So if they have to come back, then we go up.
And it's
there.
All the schools within the district coming at the same time.
So these are kind of like little work sessions, right? These are sessions where they come forward and we talk and interact, and it's more than just a presentation and we nod, which is what I think we've done in the past.
I think that's the next question on here. This is really different at this point, and we could think about if you all want to have them come 1 month so you can listen to them, and the next month you make your vote, or if you want to do it all at the same time, but you all will need to make a vote and direct that action towards that local district, or to say agree with the districts and their pathway. Sorry.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and board members, I really think that's kind of what we're trying to do is Brendan and Alyssa are trying to plant a seed, asking you really what kind of a process do you want? I mean, you could even be so bold as to say, hey, why don't we divide the board up and you take three districts, you two take three districts and meet with them maybe a little bit before they come, before the board meeting, just to make sure they're on the right track. I think
you mean our districts?
Could be. I mean, everything's on the table right now because this process has never been done before. And, you know, so it really is. And I love the way that they're laying out a possible time frame. But even as you look at this and realize how much time these districts are going to want to get, you could be at 3-4 day board meetings.
Right. We've been warned of this for some years.
What are ways that we can make sure that they're really prepared before they come before you? Could you go and meet with the district in your, as a state board member in your official capacity, could you meet with one of the districts and say, okay, show me your dog and pony show that you're going to be bringing to the state board?
It's kind of a high risk.
That's high risk.
It's a high risk idea. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but it's pretty high risk, I think.
Ms. Mesby?
These 18 or 19, that's total? Right. That's not, because we did in 2014, we had several of these districts and schools come before us, right?
They came just to have a conversation to kind of tell you about their context. Yeah, this is the actual decision-making time.
Right, so this is actual.
This is the for real.
Another question I have here is I notice on the options, you don't include the other options that the board has.
Sorry. On the slide?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about? That is. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Oh, it's the note at the top.
Where?
So for a school directed action, it does have to come from that list. But a district
school directed has to come from this list. But
a district, you have
district,
more
we get the other options. Mm-hmm. Seems like it'd be easier the other way.
If it was easy, they would have hired somebody else.
That's right.
Yes, Dr. Flores.
Why they pay us the big bucks?
What is the liability? Oh, there are threats out there that if we do something that isn't, well, there are concerns by some legal beagles that the law is not even constitutional, that we don't actually have the right to do what we're doing, what we might be doing. And so I think we should be as thoughtful as we can be and be able to justify.
So why wouldn't we want to meet with our districts and hear them?
Well, we can always meet with our districts. That's not, but to form how we do this formally, I think is what you all are asking. And that I believe we need to be very careful about. We need to continue to focus on what's good for kids.
Well,
that's got to be the
wouldn't be making. I mean,
I'm sure Mr. Dill will have some advice for us on what we ought to do and say.
Oh, yeah, that's a legal beagle over there.
I don't think this is clear. I don't think this is something we can proceed without significant legal advice.
Sure.
And I don't know if he's had a chance to even think through a lot of these possibilities.
I've been thinking through some of these possibilities and potential legal challenges for many years now. and frankly, I've been a little surprised that there wasn't a lawsuit challenging this at the very beginning.
Right.
You don't need to encourage them.
They don't need encouragement.
They don't need much
encouragement. They're just planning their timing.
Yeah. So you'll have advice for the board on how we ought to conduct ourselves and what we should say and not say, and I suspect as we get closer.
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you.
So will you jump up if we
say anything
wrong?
If we
start
rolling off the rail right now.
I would prefer to deal with that in an executive session, if at all possible.
Perfect.
Thus, the transcript of this hearing won't be Exhibit A and whatever potential lawsuit would be out there.
Thank you. That'd be good. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Ask a quick question, Commissioner. Right. So also in this time frame, couldn't there be a completely new batch starting in this June 17, June 8, July?
No, we could have more.
The ones that are at year four.
Well, it could be a totally change.
Yes, it can change based on, because we're going to have new ratings. Yeah. And again, you all are going to have to talk about the distribution and how many you want to put in turnaround and priority improvement and all that. So it all... this all ties together. But we have schools and districts that are at year four right now that entered year four, July 1, 2015. It's not as many. It's not, yeah.
There's 17 schools.
I was going to say, I wouldn't say much.
How many? One more district. No, really? 17 schools. I don't know how many unique districts, though. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
But I like Aurora tackled their year three schools at the same time they're year five, correct?
Yeah, and Aurora is year four as a district. They're the year four district. So
that was
the
one. Yeah, when we had districts coming to speak to us before, kept talking about the year five, and some of us kept saying, but look at all the other schools that are on their way, and let's make this a bigger conversation. I don't know I think maybe Aurora took that on.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not sure others have. We'll find out when we hear from them.
We will.
Okay.
All right.
So I know we answered your question.
Totally answered our question. Do you want to just hold on this one a second? If you all have thoughts in terms of if you think you'll need more than one meeting with the district and to talk about their schools, if you want to have a hearing time and then actual making your recommendation time, that would be important for us to know in terms of thinking about how we would schedule all this in. So I know that thinking about...
Is it realistic to make that kind of a decision after we have the Aurora presentation coming up?
That would help us to see how it goes.
An idea of whether we can think on the fly or whether, I mean, what I'm concerned about a little bit is that there's no shortage of questions up here. Yeah. And that if we would ask district this, and this, we would need to give them a chance to respond especially if it's something that's data that they need to come back on.
Yeah.
Or if their plan, there's another piece to the plan, can you put that in?
Because we could think about it like that. We could think about it like the charter school appeal hearings or like the accreditation appeal hearings that you all do. And you've got, we have their very structured hour time or whatever the time limits are, and then you all make a decision at the end. But it's high stakes, and to make sure you feel prepared for that kind of time frame is what we would want to make sure.
The other question I have.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sure?
Yes.
The other question I have is, what, if any, feedback will we take from others about this, from either parents in the community or reform groups or, I can't right now think about who might want to come forward to provide us input and how will that input Will that input be welcome? And how will we process it? How will we report it? What kind of timing? This is my concern, Val, about the one-on-one. Generally speaking, when we vote on anything, once something has been noted as being voting, we sort of have a rule that we all hear the same information from constituents, and that's why we get the letters, et cetera, as opposed to allowing our constituents to contact us one-on-one and possibly getting a different story.
So that shouldn't happen if we talk to our constituents?
Those are the kind of questions we need to answer.
I think it's always hard to not talk to a constituent unless this is going to boil down in some kind of quasi-judicial action, which it could very well, at which point ex parte communication would be inappropriate. So I think that's part of the threshold questions that we'll need Mr. Dill to answer for us before we get that far. If it's not quasi-judicial, then probably we certainly have a lot more freedom to meet and talk and discuss. But I was just going to observe, I think we've got, in terms of this potential May meeting with Aurora and Pueblo, we've got two of our toughest nuts that we're going to crack. These are These are difficult. I didn't mean that in a pejorative sense. These are schools that have very difficult problems that are large, and probably in many ways could set precedent. I'm a little concerned that we're letting them perhaps get out in front of this process before we are as prepared as we ought to be.
Sorry, but that's their strategy.
And I think that's their strategy. I agree. Yeah. And I may rethink this agenda as a result of that. So.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, one other idea would be to take three or four of us at CDE and working very closely with the board members, train us in the right way to go out and meet with districts ahead of time and say, okay, we know that the board is going to be looking for this, this, and this in your innovation plan. If you're not totally comfortable as a board doing it, for example, I'm meeting with Adams 14 next week with their school board to talk about just how critical this process is. It's just a study session. And there's a role for us to play in helping them be better prepared.
Absolutely.
To come here.
For you all, yes.
For staff, I
completely agree. For board members,
what if we listen? If we listen?
So,
are you sure you're capable of just listening and asking questions? I mean, think about it. I mean, just put yourself in that position. That would be difficult.
Yeah,
it's hard, and we haven't resolved the question. What is the nature of this action? And that may be the first question we could resolve in executive session. Yep. What is the nature of the action we will take? Is it legislative? Is it quasi-judicial?
I think we need to figure out how this process is going to go first. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the first thing you have to know before you know how the process is going to go. Is exactly what are we doing?
And so, therefore, what's appropriate beforehand?
I'm sorry, we haven't talked about options. All options, and that's something we need to discuss. What options are? I know.
Sounds like a July meeting.
No.
In Hawaii.
We should actually be bringing in people. We should. And I know constituents. Mm-hmm. But also outside experts as well to kind of help us through this. I think that would be very helpful. I mean, I'm still thinking about. I'm dead.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, that's right.
I'm just wondering along those lines as Commissioner Crandall was talking about taking the board separate from that, and meeting even a small part of the board to set up kind of a template that we're looking for in these, and because I think if they could go on forever and bring up as many testifiers as possible, but we are looking for certain things.
A template. That's a very good idea.
And it would be one that we would apply to every group. And I wouldn't be.
But that I would still dependent on what kind of. Right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We're talking about what kind of is this a quasi-judicial?
Well, I like the idea of the commissioner and separately maybe meeting about what you're looking for. And a few of us, whoever wants to, I'd be really interested in kind of our template. And then getting together and see if this kind of is on the same track. And I also, I may be off base here, but if they come up, I think there should be a time limit. I mean, if we have certain things we're looking for, they should be able to tell us in an hour, or I just picked that out. But, I mean, we should have this down by that time. We shouldn't be doing what I'm doing now.
Having read the review board, the commissioner's recommendation, and having a template, I think maybe you're right. Yeah. Because I think in those two, we should get a lot of the background. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, and of course they can be submitting something to us to read in advance as well, based on, in part on our template. I think that'll be helpful.
To speak to that, I'm not sure I'm overly concerned about their presentation fitting a time frame. It's the board asking questions about their specific, well, what are you going to do to address this and this and this? So is there a way to get answers to some of those questions prior to coming here? Because I think if we say you have 30 minutes to present, they'll fit that 30 minutes, but then all of us, and myself included, are going to say, well, wait, about this? I'm not sure I understand. And then all of a sudden it's a three-hour thing on that one district. So be thinking as you do this template, this process, how can we get that information to you sooner that also is not in a binder like this? Here, good luck.
But, you know, just on that, I know that we think about 15 minutes, 30 minutes. I was just reading how the department deals when districts are asking questions about this, and it's 15 minutes. You only get 15 minutes. Well, I've worked in another department where it didn't take 15 minutes. Maybe the initial call was 15 minutes, but then there were hours where you would visit, they would visit, and it would go on and on and on until there was... I don't mean that in on and on.
It was communication,
and it was really working towards getting something for those kids, getting the district either to understand, showing them the research, showing them best practices, mm-hmm. and this is the department working with districts. And I remember, there were thousands, not hundreds, not 200, but 1,147 districts, and it was hours.
So those 15-minute, I think you're talking about the accountability office hours. We do those right when the school and district performance frameworks come out, just to organize quick questions about the actual frameworks. We tell people you can sign up for multiple ones, but usually people just have little quick questions. So it's not that's not the support we give around the accountability clock at all. That's just for a teeny tiny piece of it. So,
and I'm sure that I'm taking it to a very kind of low level. I know you do more than that.
I'm wondering about the commissioner recommendation reports, like how and who puts those together.
Oh, look, you just helped us so much. That's our question at the bottom there.
You're asking us.
Yes. So we've given you all one of those reports. You saw the one for Aurora Central. You all asked for that in the June meeting, and I think we gave it to you at the beginning of August. I should just let you talk. And then we sent it to you recently. But we kind of took our best guess of what would be useful information in there, what would be helpful for you all in making your recommendation. But we would really like feedback on that. Is that the right kind of information? Is it the right length? Do you need more? Do you need less? What do you need from us?
And just as a kind of quick overview of what was in the commissioner's recommendation report, we included analysis of data, leadership, culture, academic systems, the Unified Improvement Plan, and history of grants and supports. So we did reach across multiple units and divisions within CDE to gather that information, and then we sat down with then interim Commissioner Elliot Asp, and we went through the recommendation with him. He was able to provide input into it, and then we ultimately delivered that report to you all.
How many pages was that?
Like 40.
Yeah, it was pretty good sized. I know when I picked it up and go through it, I thought, man, if I have 30 of these, and then you've got the, you know, where I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but if you don't have it, we're going to ask it.
We need to give it to you in a clear, easy to understand format, and hopefully, and I know we want to give you everything so you'll know about this district, but.
You got
to be in a table versus three pages or something like that.
Yes.
So
those questions will be encouraged during the July meeting.
You're looking for it.
Okay. All right. You're looking for what we'd like to see in commissioner reports.
Yep.
And
Yes. So anything, if you guys and you think about it, if there are components you definitely like included or not included, please let us know. In addition, we did have a question up on the slide regarding the implementation of the pathway and what the expectation was in your minds regarding whether that would happen. So for these current year five schools, if they are expected by fall 2017 to have implemented that pathway, or if the 2017-18 school year could be year zero, so maybe during that year they are starting to formulate an innovation plan or a school closure plan that would then take place the following year. That just affects the timing of the presentations, because again, if we're asking them to take some of these more drastic pathways, we'd have to get them in earlier.
You just brought up a really good point, Mr. Chair, that Brenda just said. One of the things that the two or three districts I've spoken to said, okay, so if the board does, let's take, use Aurora, if they do approve our innovation plan, what does it actually mean? Are you giving us a certain time frame before you want us to come back and report on progress? What did you just do for us? It's not really defined tightly as to what exactly that means.
Yeah.
Sounds like another executive session.
What capacity do we have to support them? So if the board says, this is what we want to see, I see you've got another template here for the contract that's going to be signed, et cetera. So we get this contract. How much capacity do we have to help them implement? Because they're going to say another unfunded mandate. Trust me. It'll be really tough without the supports. Another one of the was that one of the pieces in your 40 pager? What are the supports that you've already, not just the grants, but
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yes, thank you for that question. I mean, this is just a proposal, so we haven't actually decided on performance contracts, just something that we thought that maybe it would be a good idea, and we're just envisioning a two-page performance contract that would be signed upon your direction of action to a local school board, so the superintendent and Chairman Durham would sign this contract that would state, you are going to pursue an innovation plan for this school. However, you are expected to reach these interim benchmarks and these annual goals. And then upon a year passing the contract sign date, CDE staff would review whether they've met those goals and those benchmarks and then come back to you all with any red flags. So if a district is far off from reaching its goals, then they would possibly need to come back to you, and you could choose at that point to issue a different recommendation. However, if they're continuing to make those goals, then us at CDE staff can monitor that progress. It's just one proposal that we're throwing out there.
I really like that idea, though, because my biggest fear is that a group comes before you and makes a presentation on an innovation plan, and 3 or 4 months later, a new superintendent who knew everybody because the board said, hey, we're not happy with this tough choice you're making us go down, they're fired, and all of a sudden you have all new leadership. And I didn't make any promises to that state board there. So I like that idea of something.
Are we getting a list of superintendents and principals that have turned around schools that may have retired, that may be available to us, as opposed to hiring these consultants that speak, that talk, but really don't have a background on how to turn a school around? Are we kind of doing that right now, trying to find individuals that have actually done the work, so that if, I'm not saying imposing such a person on a school district, but if a school district says we are amenable to having, or your suggestion on people that have turned schools around, and we are amenable to bringing them in as support for turning our district, our school around. I'd like a session where we think about things like this.
Real effective turnaround superintendents and principals have actually created consulting organizations that show up.
But I'm talking about somebody with, it's not only coming for the money, but is there for, you know, has a heart, has done it. And
but they want to provide their expertise.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for.
we could stop there if you guys want.
Like
is there anything?
What do we have left?
I know that really is. Those were all the questions we had. The other slides were just the reference slides from last month, so you had them if you needed them for reference.
All right. Well,
did you get any answers?
I think before
no.
Yeah, we'll call this. Thank you. Good. But I think reality is of all the things that we've been tasked to do, it's probably turns out to be the most important
and the hardest.
And it'll be interesting to see if we can actually make a difference, because I'm not sure with the legislature, and if we do make a difference, how long the legislature will let us do it. So, I suspect making a difference is going to make people unhappy. Okay.
That's the spirit.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's see. We are now. Any of individual board members wish to report on past activities for the past month or so? Jane, any comments or things you've done want to mention?
Yeah. I'm just going to pick out a couple today. I did go to see the movie Most Likely to Succeed. It is produced by a gentleman named Ted Dinter-Smith, who's a venture entrepreneur, I won't say capitalist, but he works with industries and business, a lot of different school thinking projects, approaches he's trying out. This particular one was on a schools, plural, that he's done around the country, California, in San Jose, I think it was, right, Peter?
Mm-hmm.
And an entrepreneurial school. Grade levels are there. It's primarily high school. It is an innovative approach. We all do define that differently. I see it as very innovative. I wish I could say go see the movie. It's there. You can't just go see it.
Yeah. I think I read that it is being shown somewhere around here.
Yeah.
Where is it?
I think if you Google it, follow the papers, you can see some showings. I also have been attending local board meetings in my district. A couple of them from different tacks. Repeat district visits on different tacks. Right now, some of the schools in Adams County I'm getting my time with and following Jefferson County in a little bit different way. Jeffco is, as you know, somewhat different culture right now from even a year ago. So the conversations are of a different light, not only in bargaining and contract discussions, but also what they're doing with school finance in the big picture, but particularly what they're trying to do with construction, bonds versus mills, put them on the ballot, they're switching monies around a little bit between, switching is too informal. They are putting their funds in general funds and looking at the benefits and the, just it's tricky right now. They're all having trouble with finances, but what to put in bonds or for bond election money to start saving up for. I'm lacking vocabulary bad today, sorry. And that's about it. I've been looking at following school districts a little more carefully in their protocols, their how they operate, what's going on in schools, how kids are handling some changes in their dynamics and so forth. It's been quite fun. Oh, Read Across America Day. I've spent an entire day with elementary students reading and laughing, and they're almost as short as me, which is really very common. Nice to be around people that most of them are shorter than me for the day.
Makes you feel like a grown up, huh?
Yeah, I felt big. Like when I was in Japan, I felt really tall. It was fun.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Rankin.
I went to a really interesting blended learning conference for a couple days, and I went to the CASB conference that was here and met with some of my superintendents and school board members, and that's pretty much what I did.
Okay.
don't really have anything.
Okay. Well,
I have. I attended the legislative session on finance, and I'm sorry that I haven't attended the ones before, but now I have kind of a date for them, and I find them. I found this last one with M.
Leanne.
Most interesting, and also the legislative liaison, or the person responsible for the finance. I thought that was incredibly informative. And I also met with stakeholders, of course, on this literacy testing. I also have been working with Arupi Jesuit School in helping those students kind of go through an interview process, because they're going to be applying for the Daniel Scholarship. So it was spending a couple of evenings working and asking them questions. I got a letter back from, I guess, the director at Arupe Jesuit High School, saying that the students had said that our questions, the group that was helping interview, were more difficult than the questions that were asked by the Daniels Foundation. Also, I was had a mentee. I was mentoring someone who, of course, this is something different, but this young man just got a job with Diana DeGette, and I'm very happy that this young man who was working at some taco place, you know, before, of course. And this is a relationship with Arupe. This is a student that had been a student there before and was floundering, you know, working at some fast joint place, and now was able to, you know, help him with another internship, and now, I mean, I really miss that. In teaching, I guess that's one of the things that I miss the most, and I'm glad that I can help, and wish that, you know, I like to help young people.
Deb?
I presented at a teacher's conference on teacher quality, been meeting with parents and constituents about issues of relevance to our work on the board, so to try to get out and meet with folks and hear from them.
Okay. Why don't we, yes, go ahead.
So I can't really remember what all I did last month, except I did I did participate in a town hall in Fort Collins around school finance, and it was really fascinating because there were a number of different speakers from different levels, legislators, school district, the Bell Foundation, et cetera, and it was interesting because our perspectives were so different looking at it, and that sort of brought a much bigger picture, and it was extremely well attended, which pleased me a lot. That was fascinating. Thanks.
Okay, anything else? Jennifer's here. So, Jennifer, we have that bill to pass out, the draft, or do you have?
I did not bring hard copies.
Okay, that's all right.
It did get emailed to you this morning.
Okay.
Do we want to wait until we have hard copies available?
Let's go ahead and just discuss it.
Sure. Mr. Chair, nice to see you all again. So, do you all have it in front of you in some form, perhaps, just not hard copy? I think it'll be hard to discuss if you're not looking at it.
Did they go print it, or I don't know?
Well, try us first.
Email.
He was probably in the email.
It was in our. It's on our phone.
Depends
on the size of the print,
by the way. Sure. I guess I would. I can certainly reiterate what I said this morning, and that this bill has been drafted to say that there is a 5-year limit on waiver on the granting of innovation status by the State Board of Education. After 5 years, you all, the entity can come back to you and seek renewal or not. That's their prerogative, and you can choose to renew or not. And that the same would apply to waivers of statute for districts. So again, those would be time limited to 5 years. At the end of 5 years, they can come back and talk with you all about whether those should be continued.
This is the bill that we discussed that we might want to proactively pursue that would put some sort of time limit on the waivers we granted, you know, over, but can't remember how many.
Is it a bill or is it a draft?
It's a draft. It's not.
Okay.
And I think the decision is, I mean, we've gotten down to kind of short notice to get in front of the full board, and there's some risks attendant with this, not the least of which I think it get confused with the charter school waiver bill. So it's not as clean because of the introduction of that bill as we might have hoped. And today, interestingly enough, when we handle it pretty well on our own, and if the board kind of had a policy of inserting in any of these automatic waivers as a condition of granting them, that there's a 3 or 5 year expiration, it just struck me today that maybe we'd need to figure out how to revisit the few that we have granted, but we can at least, going forward, ensure, and if legislators are concerned about us granting waivers in perpetuity, we can actually, just as a matter of negotiation with the people requested, put a stop to it. And that, is that, I think I want to ask the board, is that preferable to trying to go through with a bill at this point in time, Dr. Shuffle?
That would be my thought. I don't think we need a law for this. I think we can infuse this in our policies and accomplish the same thing with greater ease and more flexibility, I think.
Yeah,
well, but we've done it with waivers, but we've not done it with innovation programs.
That's true. We've not done it with innovation programs.
Well, we could.
Well, we could.
Could we, Mr. Dale?
I'll have to look at the specific language in the Innovation Schools Act to see what it says. I recall it was a couple months we took a look at that.
The challenge is they have to agree to it. And we actually can't turn down a school of or a district of innovation if they don't agree to it. We only have two reasons why we don't grant innovation. We're very, very limited in the area of innovation.
Denver Public Schools did a study through the University of Colorado in Denver with the innovation schools that they had, and they looked at positives and negatives for innovation. The only factor that came out that was at all critical or that they could say was had any meaning at all was that the teachers that had stayed at the school had a better self-concept of themselves. And then I thought, well, you know, after the massacre, you're standing there. Why wouldn't you have a better self-concept? But that was the only factor that they found that had any meaning in all those innovation schools that they had done. So,
in other words, there weren't better outcomes for kids.
No. It was just a teacher self-concept,
Mr. Chair, under the current Innovation Schools Act, the waiver continues until the local school board ends innovation status or the school in question is closed.
And relative to Dr. Schroeder's, do we really have any grounds? School district X shows up here tomorrow and say they want an innovation status. Do we have the right to turn that down?
Yes.
But only on two factors.
Yes, so there's grounds you have to.
What are the two factors, off the top of your head?
Oh, no, I don't.
Finance?
Actually
we have that information here.
Essentially, it boils down to it won't make anything worse, as I recall. Really?
Yeah.
That's
so we have to find that it would be worse.
Right. But if it gets worse later, there's not a darn thing we can do. That's why we've had this discussion.
It would be cleaner if there was a review process for the state board in the law. than trying to put them in, you know, on an ad hoc basis as they come up.
So on, at least on innovation, so how many does the draft bill deal with innovation and something else, or just innovation at this point?
Mr. Chair, it deals with both innovation and with the general waivers you all can give to districts. And just one thing to add to the conversation that I think may be helpful. I've worked with the drafter of the bill today based on some of the comments you all gave me this morning. I think there's a way we can write the title to make it clear that this is not about charter schools. So I know that was one issue that came up, and obviously you all are having a good discussion about whether you want to go forward. But if you do want to go forward, I want to assure you that I think we can make it clear that it's not about charter schools.
And we could also, if we decided to, just have deal with only with the innovation statute.
Absolutely.
So which would, because we know we can do those others. How many, just show of hands, are you, would you prefer no bill, a bill on innovation? Is there a preference? Don't want to proceed at this time?
Do we have more flexibility if we, like we did today? I mean, I kind of like the flexibility we have with the time limit. And, but if we put this into law and it's 5 years, then we're stuck there.
Right. We'd want it drafted not to exceed, I think, would be one of the.
But do we need this?
Yeah, we do.
We have.
We have. I think we do because we really don't have an easy way to go back to a district and say, you know, you were a district credit with distinction. Now you're working your way down toward the clock. Mm-hmm. Here's the wave. Here's when you became a district of innovation. Here were the waivers that you requested. Mm-hmm. And show us that those waivers aren't part of the reason that this is happening. Or that if you implemented something more robust, things wouldn't be better for kids.
So if they already are on innovation, once this goes into law, is it 5 years after that law for that school? Do we have to read
new? Probably. I wish the bill summary were a little more extensive so it doesn't feel punitive or threatening.
But do we really want a bill, though? I mean, seriously,
well,
we did pretty well today.
We do well.
We're talking about two different things. We're talking about waivers. And we haven't had a district that said, no, we won't come back in 3 years, but we've only begun starting to ask for that. We've only asked that twice. And then we have innovation where we have absolutely no authority once we grant that waiver. Those are two very different, to me, those are two very different things.
I think the innovation is clearly different. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what's everybody's preference? Let me just say.
I don't want to make the decision right now.
No, okay.
But I would prefer to have no bill. I would prefer to be able to work it through our board policy.
If we can do it like we did today, I really like that. But if we have to have one, I would say just take that innovation one.
Just take section two.
Start with that. Yeah, that might be the that might be a good compromise. But I'd still like a better explanation that's not so punitive at the very beginning if possible.
Duly noted. The drafters write those, and I will give her your feedback and
yeah.
See.
We just want some assurances that once you have innovation status, that the circumstances continue that this is fine for kids, or that what was the other one's financial, and I can't remember specifically what the wording
those
is.
Those are
but
the,
look
the
at
two.
The
I have them here. The two specific criteria by which you may deny an innovation plan. Which the other distinction that's important here is they don't bring you innovation waivers. They bring you an innovation plan. The waivers are part of that plan, right? So you approve the whole plan, which just includes those waivers. And the only reasons you can say no to that are that it either is likely to result in a decrease in academic achievement in the innovation schools or innovation school zones, or is not fiscally feasible.
Mm-hmm. You know,
let me just poll the board. Jane, do you have a preference?
No, if we're going to do it, I think it's better to start with the second part.
Section two.
Delineate the waiver, the innovation from the district. Get that out. I do. I've been kind of on the bandwagon for a long time. We need to have a point where we can come back and check these waivers, especially, and it applies mostly to innovation. It's not so much charter.
Well,
Deb,
my feeling is that it decreases flexibility, so I'd prefer not to have a bill. And I think there are other safeguards in place to where if an innovation school is doing harm, there are other safeguards in place that we don't need another law.
What are they?
They report their data. I mean, there's all kinds of ways we could look to see in their districts have that responsibility. Right.
The local school board.
Yeah.
Well, the other finding in that research study that the University of Colorado Denver did on DPS was that actually the schools were given, you know, they could do anything in innovation. But it ended up that they really didn't do anything. I mean, they didn't do anything that was not the status quo. In other words, they just continued on doing the same things, even though they were given, you know, the world. They were, you know, just designed something that will really help those students. And they didn't. So that was... So that's something I think we need to be...
Yes or no.
I think we're too far from consensus to proceed with the bill at this time.
Mr. Chair, obviously I work for all of you, and that's perfectly fine. I will tell you...
The client doesn't want to do something.
right. You just made my life a lot easier, so no problem there. But I would just for your future thinking, if you decide that you do want to go forward with this session, that would be rather difficult once we get past next Tuesday. So I'm not trying to change your minds or persuade you or anything. I just want you to know that the 15th is a fairly hard deadline. I wouldn't say it's set in concrete. I don't know, is that the hardest thing? I'm not sure. But it's pretty hard. So in making this decision today, if you wanted to do legislation, you're probably looking at next year.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
Very good. Okay. That's any other business? If we have any...
There's one person signed up for...
One person signed up to speak, okay?
Grab that, okay. I'm going to give you some action.
Sarah Sampaio.
Yes, hello again. My name is Sarah Sampaio. Thank you all for doing everything you do on this board to serve our schools and our families. I was not planning to speak again, but the question was asked about what people are saying about the growth model. So I wanted to share some feedback that I have received. Feedback from students I have received: start low and show growth. The students have discovered how to succeed in the growth model. They intentionally slack off in the beginning of the year so they can show growth towards the end. As a parent, I was a little disappointed to hear that. I've also heard generic reports nationwide where overachievers who, according to their score, they had to get a score, for example, a 194 on their next standardized test to show growth. The student only scored a 187, and as a result, both the student and the teacher were dinged as not showing growth. It was not factored into the equation that the total possible score was only a 187. So in the growth model, the student who scored a perfect score twice in a row was labeled as failing to show growth, and the teacher also received bad marks as a result. So the unintended consequences that must be considered with the growth model is that it encourages mediocrity and punishes achievers. I would like to see a model that encourages and rewards excellence. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right. We're now, I think we're ready for adjournment. Any other business to come before the board? Seeing none, we'll stand adjourned until the April meeting. Thank you.